This is Believe in Buckeyes. This show is brought to you by Bet Online. Chim, hit him with that.
So Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over online to the online casino. You can play blackjack, poker, and unwind. Head to the website today. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use your promo code Believe for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here.
And if you have any issues with gambling, always feel free to reach out to 1-800-GAMBLER. They're 24/7 to help you out anything you may need in that category. But yes, this is Believe in Buckeyes. I'm Brian Browning with All-American Chimney Checkoff. We got a very special guest. I think this is the first time we had a guest on the show previous and had a brought Ashley. Got him to come back to do another show. But we got Joe DeLong with us, part of the Believe Network. His show is The First Team. How you doing, Joe? How's Memorial Day weekend treating you?
I'm doing good, and no better way to be celebrating Memorial Day than talking football. Man, I need this offseason to be over. It feels slow. I've got too much time on my hands. I need football on. I don't know about you guys, but I'm
over it. You haven't been watching the UFL?
I have been. I watched Adrian Martinez throw a stupid interception the other night, but I've been watching a little bit of that. Have you guys been watching it? Sounds like you are.
I've watched a couple games. Saw a few familiar names. So I think people should go out and watch. People should, if they're in the areas, they should go to the games. If it's on TV, the one thing about it is I never know when games come on. So if I find a game, it's just because I'm flipping through channels. And this is an era where we rarely just flip through channels, right? Like you're just watching Netflix and other stuff. But I think the games have been good. So.
Yeah. When I do put it on, it is good football. You should try to catch them in the fourth quarter. And that's when, obviously, the game is on the line. And it is side of things, but getting DVR. I'm setting my day around it at all. But, Joe, so where you at right now? Are you in Jersey right now? You said visiting family?
Yeah, I'm in Jersey. Don't have the usual juiced up recording setup, but I'm in Jersey to get away a little bit for Memorial Day. The off season, just trying to watch as much film as I can, and I've been doing that a lot this weekend with time off.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Now, so if you guys haven't caught our previous show with Joe, Joe is for the Bleed Network, he's kind of like our draft guy. Like he watches the most film. I'm gonna just give you that right now. Joe watches the most film for our Believe brotherhood here, and so we come to this guy for to see how guys are going, how people, I guess, stacking up across the nation. So we're looking at our 24 class. Obviously, we had you on. We spoke about those guys. You said Marvin Harrison Jr. would be the first wide receiver off the board. You got that right. So I'm going to give you that.
you could give me that one. Let's, remove the context that nobody was going to beat him out for that spot. But
there was some arguments here, right? There was some arguments out there about who was the number one receiver off the board. And there was a guy who got picked very close, right? Very close. Yeah.
I tweeted this actually really recently because I was watching Will Johnson, who is the Michigan corner who, I don't know if I'm allowed to say Michigan on the show or not, but
the corner from the other team. They beat us three times in a row at this point.
Fair. At least say their name, I guess. I don't know.
I was watching him, though, and I was watching him and for another corner as well. And both times, man, I just was reminded, like, why was there a debate? Why Malik Nabers is a good football player. I'm a Giants fan. I'm excited that they got Malik Nabers. But, God, no one can move the way that guy can and make the catches that he can. With his frame, box guys out. It should have been the easiest evaluation, but like you said, Jim D, people were just making an argument for no no reason.
Yeah, it got interesting. I didn't think there was much of a debate. I will say this about the two players is that they're very different to me. Like, they're very different. So if you're looking for, a guy who maybe can gets a bunch of reverses, run the ball, do a bunch of things, more of like a Percy Harvin type, if that's the need that you're looking for, right? I think maybe you do have Nabers number one on your board, but you talk about best player available, Marvin Harrison, man, is generational talent. So I'm happy to continue to watch his development for sure. You mentioned Will Johnson, and I'm obviously a little bit biased. I think the best cornerback in the Big Ten plays for Ohio State. I think Denzel Burke is the best cornerback in the Big Ten. one of the, you know, the best in the nation. And then when you start looking at 2 and 3, I'm still kind of saying Ohio State has. But now, Will Johnson's a pretty good corner. Just from your perspective, and not just the Big Ten, mm-hmm. right? But who would you say is probably the first, maybe first or second cornerback going into this season?
Yeah, I think that it is definitely Will Johnson. And what we're talking about here with Burke, he took a huge step forward this past year. So, some people that I talked to right before the draft declarations came out thought that if Burke declared, he could have been a late first rounder. And I think that we talked about this back when I was on, and it's really huge that he came back for Ohio State. I think that he's still in that conversation. This defensive back class is very talented. So I think that there is kind of reverse of what happened with the receivers this past year. I think we're going to have a ton of guys that go in the top 15. A lot of teams are going to be aggressive trying to go after guys like Burke, but it has to be Will Johnson for me, because it's 6'2". He's 205, 210. He's got a really big frame for a corner, and he's got a, you typically don't see corners that are that heavy, you know, for the most part. They're 2'5", 210. And he plays like it. He moves like a smaller corner, and he also can bring some pretty good power to the position, which is, I think, what makes him the top corner in this year's class and just in college football in general. His instincts, too, are unbelievable. That's what I think puts him in a separate category. I think there's so many good corners this year, but he's in this other category where there's a number of times before plays happen, he comes downhill and he'll make a play. Like the interception that he had on Kyle McCord, and I'm not trying to bring back any bad
come
memories.
Come on, Joe. Come
but,
on.
But that interception that he had, it was a bad decision by McCord. But if he didn't react the way that he did and jump, he literally jumped the route before the ball was even decided to have been thrown. So those instincts for me are kind of why I think that Will Johnson fits into this different conversation. It's just so, so gifted.
Yeah, just to remind everybody of that play. Right, he did have a safety over the top. We're talking about Marvin Harrison here, so he had a safety over the top. No, I'm not taking nothing away from him, right? But he was protected over the top, so he was able to jump that route. Kyle McCord had to make a decision. Marvin Harrison needed to run that route harder to protect his quarterback at the same time. So there were some mistakes there, but yeah, you know, Will Johnson definitely, probably top two. Right, I'm still going with Denzel Burke, but. I appreciate that that insight there.
Yeah, Joe. So, I mean, going back to our this year at Ohio State for this season, the 24-25 season, we had a lot of guys come back, right? A lot of guys we thought would enter the draft for the 24 year decided to play another year of college football. So, obviously, we got basically four guys up front on the defensive line, right? From JT to Sawyer to Tyleek. Looking at those guys up front, who do you think has the most potential to be a first round guy to kind of, you know, be another big D lineman for Ohio State going the first round?
Well, first of all, I think that all three guys are on the table to go in the first round. I think that JT and Sawyer are such high floor prospects that a team in the back end of the first round, middle of the first round, is going to very easily be able to make the decision of, okay, we know we're getting a well-coached guy. We know we're getting a tough edge rusher that's going to be physical, that's going to punch you in the mouth, and that's going to give high effort every single play. That's what you're going to get with either of those guys. So I can totally see one of them. But the one who I think is the highest potential is Tyleek Williams. Tyleek Williams is just a rare athlete for his size and his frame. His role doesn't really net a lot of production. Because he's taking up a ton of space, he's clogging lanes, he's freeing up everybody around him. The only thing that gets tough, because he's got the most potential, the NFL seemingly doesn't love to draft those types of defensive tackles early. Their value, despite being really gifted players, tends to get pushed down. Unless you're somebody like Devondre Sweat, who's a physical outlier and is just crazy, freakishly big, and he still ended up going in the middle of the second round. Unless you're one of those guys, it's a bit of an uphill battle. The defensive tackles that do typically get drafted highly are the ones that were like Michael Hall, which are these low to the ground, very quick-footed, very shifty, highly disruptive, pass-rushing type guys that can play all three downs. Like Byron Murphy from Texas he might have actually been the first defensive tackle selected.
Yeah, I believe so.
Really good example that the NFL looks for defensive tackles that they know have this pass rush upside. I think Tyleek does have that, but just because of how big he is and the role that he's going to be playing, might push him down a little bit, but he could have the best NFL career out of those three guys to talk about.
In terms of defensive end, Jack Sawyer, JT, thought they had solid years last year. There was a lot of talk within, I guess, Buckeye Nation that we just weren't getting enough pressure on the quarterback. So, you know, as you get closer to the end of the year and guys are considering whether or not they're going to stay or they're going to leave, when you start hearing what they're projected at for the NFL, it was somewhat surprising, I think, for a lot of Buckeye fans to see how highly these guys were looked at, given that they didn't feel like they got the necessary pressure, at least until the end of the year, that was expected. What do you see from a Jack Sawyer and a JT in terms of how they're viewed from like an NFL scout standpoint?
It's really interesting, and I didn't know that you're talking about here, how the fans didn't feel like there was a lot of pass rush production. There wasn't a lot of like tangible sack numbers that were coming from these guys. Like, you know, there's no double digit sack guy that we're talking about here. I didn't know that. And I think that really fits the ideas that I have been, you know, really feeling when I've been watching these guys. They both feel like secondary rushers. They both feel like guys that are, again, high floor, that are going to play 100 miles an hour, but aren't necessarily going to be the ones who finish the plays. You know, they divert attention away. They're going to put up a fight, but they're not the one. They're not the finishers. They're not a Nick Scowerton who transferred from Purdue to Texas A&M. They're not a James Pierce Jr. from Tennessee. Those guys are physical freaks who they get home, and they had the sack numbers to prove it. That is really interesting, though, that you bring that up, because again, I really like them as players, and I think that they're going to be good in the back end of the first round, beginning of the second round, because of the role that they can play. But I don't necessarily see if I project them as a 10 sack guy in the NFL if they improve on X, Y, or Z thing that they need to improve on. They just don't have those freaky traits that we get with these rare edge rushing prospects that come around every so often.
Yeah. So, Joe, so obviously this is an interesting week in college football, right? This is, you know, not X's and O's. I know that's your specialty, right? Watching film. But we had a ruling kind of come in where you see the power conferences of the NCAA decide to accept a settlement because they was being sued basically due to some missed funds for some classes. And this ruling is going to lead to the top conferences, the power conferences, now paying, being able to kind of come up with a, I hate to say a cap, but kind of like a cap, like for their roster when it comes to college football. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's going to change the game a lot? Or just overall, what's your thoughts on that, Joe, and that ruling coming in, and that now that the teams can pay players directly and it no longer has to come through an NIL situation?
Yeah, I think that this, it's so complex. Like, this is, and I'm almost shocked by, one, how little coverage there has been up until the decision actually came through. And then I also was shocked by the just general lack of understanding to the average football fan. Even the three of us who have been paying attention to this, like, it's still even fully hard to grasp all the things that could change from it, not just from the player standpoint, but the way that teams are going to be built in the future, which brands are going to be the ones that succeed from this. If we're talking from a player standpoint, I think that this was extremely necessary. It was really, really important for NIL, the transfer portal, those things in particular, to be brought in and to be able to be policed by the NCAA, to be able to be policed by these conferences. This was the first major step in making an improvement for that. It's easier to be policed because a lot of the money that's going to be paying these players is coming directly from relationships with the universities. Yeah. And I think part of this now too, and one of the biggest desires, is public disclosure of NIL deals that are happening. I think that's what has led to a lot of problems, is that there's so much obscurity, there's so much ambiguity. Nobody wants to tell anybody what they're making. And I think that's what's causing the most problems. If you sign a deal, it should be public. If it's involved with your relationship with going to a school and deciding to go somewhere, it should be public. If you sign a deal with Beats, that's a completely different story. If they're not trying to sway your decision-making, it's a completely different story. but we needed this. We needed some sort of revenue sharing cap in order to reel this in to some extent. And I think it's going to still be 10 years before we see the real progress of what the sport could be. But I am kind of curious from your guys' perspective, having played at the big time programs. I played FCS football at a CAA school. I wasn't touching any of that money. We weren't getting a cap. I was a long snapper. I doubt that I would have gotten thrown any cash. But I'm kind of curious that, like, the way that you guys see this, because you technically could have been, or not technically, you would have been a part of a team that would have been paid if this had happened 10, 15 or so years ago.
Joe, not only would we have been a part of a team that would have been paid, we likely wouldn't have gotten our senior year vacated because guys were selling jerseys and stuff. Oh, by the way, we still don't have a record of a senior year. So, you know, the next lawsuit.
Wait, they give Reggie Bush his Heisman back, but they haven't done anything for.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy. And they let the guys play in the games, even though this thing was pending, and then came back and took the wins. But, you know, the way I look at this ruling is how much change happens. I think a lot of fans want to know, like, okay, how does this affect my school? And, you know, kind of what we're seeing is there's two conferences in college football, two big-time conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten. That's where the money is because that's where the TV deals are. You got teams like Clemson and Florida State stuck in this ACC long-term deal, and they're just not generating the same level of revenue. So trying to understand, like, okay, how is this going to impact? Is Purdue or Northwestern or Maryland going to be generating $60 million or so from TV revenue while the Clemsons and the Florida States get less, and then having to be able to pay that money to their players? I'm just interested in what the ramifications are for the different schools and how they stack up, and who does it benefit the most, and who does it hurt the most?
Well, that was kind of what I was saying a second ago with, you know, there's the players' angle and how they benefit slash how their relationship and their careers change. But, like, I immediately, like, my thought when this came through is any premier brand, any big name brand that we see in these, like, you know, I think Forbes, or there's always these Sports Business Insider companies that release, like, here are the biggest value brands based on what dollar. I don't know where they come up with those figures, but the Texases, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Notre Dames, Alabama, LSU. I think that at the end of the day, that they will continue to be the ones that benefit the most from this because they're always going to generate the most eyeballs. But you do bring up the best point of, like, how much does this force Clemson, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina? I don't think there's anyone in the Big 12 really, but those teams to feel really pissed off at the TV deal that they have and their inability to now pay the players and to pay a competitive roster in order to win a national championship. Like, that's the biggest part of all this.
Yeah, and I think, when you look at it, this whole college football, the whole business model has been built on, you know, generating a product and not necessarily paying the employees who do the work. And that's just the reality of it. And when overnight, and I guess it hasn't really been overnight, it's kind of been a transition. I would assume that some teams were already preparing for this and are somewhat prepared, and others maybe not so much. But the reality is, when you have a business model that is built on, well, let's say the minimum wage was $6 an hour, and then overnight the minimum wage jumps to $15 an hour. I think there's going to be a lot of schools that are stressed. But I don't think Ohio State's going to be one of those schools. That's what my brain point is.
They're
going to
be probably the biggest benefactor. I mean, like, Ohio State was the first school that I thought of where, you know, now on top of this, you have this past year was you had the backing of your alumni base and your collectives. And then now you get to fly in all of the TV revenue and all of just the money that can come from the branding that is Ohio State, which is, I think, pretty consistently like top three in the most valuable brands in college football. Like, I think this is going to be a renaissance period for Ohio State. Not to put, you know, any jinx on you guys or anything, but this is only going to net positive things for Ohio State specifically. The first school that I thought of was the Buckeyes.
Yeah, so like, so what you're saying is Joe Ohtani win a national championship. That's what I'm hearing. It's time. Like, it's no more.
Well, there's a little more pressure at that now. It's like the national championship should be on the radar. But like, what happens if you guys don't win one now with everything on the
line? Right. Yeah, it's kind of double-edged sword. That's for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's all moving in the right direction. I would say. Obviously, I love hearing the fact that the guys are starting to. Start to receive some type of compensation coming directly from the university. Obviously, the NIL world is good, it's fine, and it's dandy, but it's kind of start to question, like, where is some of this stuff coming from, right? You start hearing about, like you say, the figures we kind of hear about, but you can't confirm, where's all this money coming from? But now, you know, you kind of tie back to the universities. We know, all right, we had this TV deal on the line. You know, we are drawing these type of viewers. We had this type of advertising. And it's kind of just, like you say, kind of pitted forefront. This is what's going on. This is what we're paying guys. And, you know, plan for this to take place. And obviously it's going to change things across college sports, right? Because now you're looking at certain schools that had a budget, like Chin was saying, not used to paying guys. Now they have to pay them. So what are you losing, right? Or is that going to affect this smaller sport that we have been funding directly through the money that we was making off of football? How's that going to affect this sport here in general? Can we still have it? And obviously those conversations will have to be had. And obviously certain situations is kind of going to miss out due to it. But I just feel like when it comes down to it, the guys that are putting in the work, the people that are generating funds, they deserve something as well. Obviously all three of us played college football. Imagine if we was getting paid, you know, while we was in college, you know, how that could have changed.
You wasn't getting no money while you was in college?
I wasn't getting no money, man. No, man. I was an offensive lineman, man. I wasn't getting any money.
You wasn't getting just
money. I sure you remember the Ford T. I drove a 95 Ford Taurus.
I do remember the Ford Taurus.
In college, man. And that was, we're not that old. A 95 was an old car when we had then, man. So, but this, you know, little things like that you could have changed, that you could have worked on, that you could have built on from back there, would have had you now. Because once again, we were spending that work as well and kind of doing things to kind of, you know, stay and maintain from that standpoint. But the situation is the situation, but I'm glad that things are changing now. And, you know,
it was interesting to me.
Looking forward to the future.
What's interesting to me, Kormani McClain, the cornerback that was with Colorado, transferred to Florida. Florida's, I think they were capped at their scholarship. The scholarship roster was capped. So they used kind of NIL funds to pay him to pretty much cover his school and whatever else, right? So they kind of got around the scholarship. So it also seems like from this ruling, or at least moving forward, they're probably going to increase the amount of scholarships for a roster, but also cap the roster. So you can't have, you know, 100 and whatever bunch of walk-ons, maybe cap the roster at 100, but increase the scholarships as well. So that's potentially more guys on the roster, more guys being able to get paid as well.
I think there's been a couple numbers that have been thrown out there with the roster size thing. And this is, again, there's so many pieces to the settlement that are going to change the way that we know college football. I've seen 100, I've seen 85. I think that also is a really positive aspect for reshaping and allowing for a little bit more parity across the sport. Just think about it, how many of the top teams, and you know, Ohio State is one of them, and Alabama and Georgia, that can stockpile talent for multiple years, you know, and have the roster space and the scholarships and the money. But if there's now a limit to the amount of guys you can have on a roster, like it's a pro team, we're going to see a lot less of that. We're going to see a lot more movement. We're going to see a lot more guys that do hop out and then decide where their permanent home is. And there's going to be a lot more limitations in recruiting. I think that recruiting classes could maybe shrink a little bit. It's going to be less maybe trying to go after premier guys and just getting high floor players to fill out the back end of recruiting classes. But that, to me, I think could be a real big benefit here, where Georgia isn't just rolling five deep with five stars, and that some more of those guys can end up at mid-level SEC programs, mid-level Big Ten programs, and we are going to have better quality games. I think that for some reason during this whole NIL era, everyone's complained that like all the best players just end up on the best teams now that the money's in the public. But I think that now with this settlement, that can certainly change a bit.
I think it can, but you know, if I'm trying to put myself back into a recruit's shoes, if I'm getting recruited by multiple Big Ten teams, I'm still likely to go to the team because of the transfer portal. Now, this is where things get tricky. True. Like, because I could leave and go play elsewhere. Why not start at Ohio State? Like, why not start at Oregon? Why not start at Georgia? Why not start at Alabama? And then after a year, I look to my right and left and say, yeah, you know what? I may be able to play here, but this is going to be hard. Now let me go transfer somewhere else and go play. And I'm still going to get paid there as well, to your point. Like, you know, you can go to one of those other schools and still get the income. But the transfer portal just makes it so that you can go and not really have to be concerned about playing. And then make a decision later on if things don't work out for you. So,
well, the inverse can also happen. You're 100% right, and I think that a lot of kids do approach it that way. I mean, Julian Sain, first one I kind of even like really quickly think of where he was there for a short period of time, where already had established relationship with Bill O'Brien, and it's a quick, easy phone call for him to end up with Ohio State. Bill O'Brien ends up leaving for Boston College, but like that was kind of the catalyst for him ending up with Ohio State. But there are instances, and it's kind of interesting if you hear some of the Power Four coaches look at the G5 and talk about how they're not capitalizing on the opportunity that they have to sell to some kids. If you're a low-level four-star or a mid-level four-star, why not take that chance and go to a program like Toledo that's really good? Play your freshman year and then transfer. I mean, they just had a kid go in the first round. Quinnion Mitchell in the first round. So I 100% agree with you, Chimdy, and I think that there's just now more ways, I think, for guys to play the sport and to develop and for rosters to be built the way that things are changing the way that they are.
Okay. So, Joe, I want to put you on the spot here before we kind of wrap up here to close the show. 2025 draft, who is the first player off the board?
Just in general, we're not talking
about Ohio State
guys.
Not outside. Yeah, that's who's the best player. Who's number one? Obviously, you can change, right? But who you got?
All right, I'm going to give you two. I think that the easy one is James Pierce Jr. from Tennessee. I think that he is just an athletic freak. Anyone who has a second, I implore you to go watch his highlights because the length, the bend that he has. The pickup speed, like he might be a 4.3 guy at the combine, like a 4.4, 4.3 guy for an edge rusher, which is unheard of. He's just so rare. And if whoever's picking first overall, if it's the Panthers, they're not going to take a quarterback likely unless Bryce Young falls off a cliff. It would make sense for them to take James Pierce Jr. But my wild card that I keep pushing, I really think that Cam Ward at Miami has some silly traits. And this is a hot take. I think that if everything goes well at Miami, the way that the ball just flies off his hand and he improves on some of the deficiencies that he has with his decision-making, he's a very risky decision-maker. Everyone does the whole Patrick Mahomes cliche where they say, who's the next Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of that to him, and I think that teams are going to fall in love with that during the process. And if there's just somebody out of nowhere, that's my hot take. I think the Cam Ward could be the guy.
Real quick. What about Shedeur Sanders? Where do you stack him up amongst the quarterbacks?
I really like Shedeur. I think that I haven't graded enough quarterbacks, admittedly. I always wait to do those a little bit later on just because like quarterbacks are much more time consuming because you got a chart. Yeah. You got to kind of pay attention to like, okay, what was their decision making? You got to really, really dig in on just like one play in particular to pay attention to their decision making. But I think that his decision-making, his football IQ, the way that he reacts with everything falling apart around him on a play where he didn't have a lot of blocking, there were a number of injuries to his skill position players. Like he always just found a way to get the ball out. And that's always valuable. Guys like that, that can just always find ways to deliver the ball and just find somebody. My co-host Ryan Roberts, who I do the first team with, he compared him to Teddy Bridgewater, and I can kind of see that where just really accurate, really, really consistent, and he was really good for the Vikings until he got hurt, and he's been a pretty good pro since that injury. But I think that he's going to be probably a top 10 pick. assuming there probably will be some teams that don't like the way that, you know, he's been on Twitter and said some things about teammates, and the ones that look past that and just see that he's a really good leader and a really good football player are going to get that. And I think that he's certainly going to be a strong prospect in this class. Are you guys fans of him? Do you like him in this class?
I think he's the best quarterback. I honestly think he's the best quarterback. I like Cam Ward. I think Cam Ward can be the best, but you just don't know how much a guy is going to develop and grow, get the ball out on time, et cetera. I think Shadir is his trajectory is on that path to be the guy.
So. Oh yeah,
yeah. I like him. I don't know if I'm as high on him as Chimmy is. I just think he's a good college quarterback. Obviously this year. It's tough because you never know what that team in Colorado is going to really look like. But I would like to see him improve on several things. I feel like he holds the ball a little bit too long. I know they talk about the offensive line a lot, but I feel like sometimes he's kind of holding the ball because I'm an offensive line guy, so I'm going to put on the quarterback, right? But I think he's a good player. And, I would like to kind of see him keep improving on certain things and kind of being a little bit more timely with things. But, before we get off, though, just a couple announcements for Buckeye Nation. We got to shout out Billy Price. Billy Price is retiring. Class of 2018, first round draft pick to the Cincinnati Bengals. It was a very good Buckeye. I was an offensive line guy. I used to love watching Billy play. I just feel like there's certain games you go out there and he just literally did not miss a block for entire games, which is very special to see. So I hope he gets to enjoy retirement. Obviously, I think he had like a blood clot situation that kind of hit him a little early. But, he played a lot of good football, so I hope he can continue on with life there. Out the transfer portal, I don't know if we announced this or not, but Keenan Nelson Jr., safety out of Southern South Carolina, is joining the Buckeye roster going forward here. And we lost a cornerback, decommitted Blake Woodby, who's a four-star cornerback, decided to decommit, and that's just how the game is played now. But, Joe, so thanks for joining us here. Once again, you guys can always catch Joe on the first team, part of our Believe Network Brotherhood here. And, Chim, like we like to end all our shows with an OH.
Ayo.
I can't use both hands, so I
good. You get a pass. You get a pass.
We spelled the whole word. It's all right. Go Bucks, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Go Bucks.